KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
Cloudy skies and 33 degrees here at the KJN studios. We picked up just shy of a half inch of rainfall here the past day period at 48 one-hundredths of an inch of rain here at the KJN studios, and Messina reporting 40 one-hundredths of an inch of rainfall overnight as well. Good morning. I'm Chris Parks with a check of the latest in-state and local news on KJAN. Firefighters from Marnie and Atlantic were dispatched this morning to a residential fire northeast of Marnie at 57504 Dallas Road. According to the dispatch report that went out just before 5 a.m., the kitchen was on fire in the home and everyone was being evacuated. Marnie Fire reported the flames had been knocked down as of 5:17 a.m. and crews were making their initial entry into the structure. An overhaul, cleanup, and ventilation of the home was underway at 5:36 a.m. No other details are currently available. The Montgomery County Sheriff's Office reports the arrest of two men in separate incidents early Saturday morning. At 12:01 a.m., deputies arrested 40-year-old Michael Todd Brace of Red Oak in the 200 block of East Knuckles Street on a valid Adams County warrant for failure to appear. Brace was turned over to the Adams County authorities and booked into the Adams County Jail on $100 cash-only bond. At 3:07 a.m., deputies arrested 19-year-old Heath Robert Woods of Red Oak in the 2300 block of D Avenue. Woods was charged with felony eluding and operating while intoxicated first offense. He was also cited for speeding 95 miles per hour, possession of alcohol under the legal age, and two stop sign violations. Woods was taken to the Montgomery County Jail and held on $5,000 bond. Montgomery County deputies were assisted by officers of the Red Oak Police Department. The Montgomery County Sheriff's Office reports the arrest of a Nebraska man on Friday evening in Red Oak. At 7:20 p.m., deputies arrested 25-year-old Dalton Briggs of Bellevue, Nebraska, on a valid Montgomery County warrant for harassment first degree. He was arrested in the 100 block of West Coolbaugh Street in Red Oak and taken to the Montgomery County Jail and held on $2,000 cash bond. The Page County Sheriff's Office reports 42-year-old Nathaniel Gene Teeters of Yorktown was arrested in Clarinda a little after 3 p.m. on Friday on a Page County warrant. The warrants were for violation of probation and domestic abuse assault impeding air blood flow causing bodily injury. Teeters was being held without bond in the Page County Jail. Page County Sheriff's Office and the Clarinda Police Department worked together in taking Teeters into custody. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has rejected a petition from an animal rights group that sought more humane treatment for turkeys and chickens sent to slaughter. California-based Mercy for Animals filed a petition in November asking the USDA to include poultry in the Humane Methods of Slaughter Act, a 1958 law that makes it a crime to abuse or neglect pigs and cows during slaughter. The head of the USDA's Office of Food Safety said in denying the petition that other regulations ensure humane poultry treatment. Mercy for Animals says it has proof that chickens are abused or scalded to death in tanks of hot water and sometimes have legs and wings cut off while still conscious. The group's attorney said Friday legal options to overturning the decision are under consideration. Officials say the injured mother of two children killed in a Waterloo house fire has also died. The Courier reports that 33-year-old Amber Dawn Everman died shortly before noon on Friday at University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City, where she had been taken after being pulled from the burning home on Thursday morning by firefighters. Two of her children also pulled from the fire, 9-year-old Amari Burkett and 6-year-old Ava Everman, were pronounced dead Thursday at a Waterloo hospital. A third child, a girl, was able to escape by crawling through her bedroom window. Authorities have not yet determined how the fire started. Firefighters say several dogs and a cat were also killed in the fire. Also in other local news, Denise O'Brien, a Cass County farmer, announced on Friday that she is running for Iowa House District 21. The district is comprised of Adams County, Union County, and parts of Cass and Pottawatomie counties. In a statement, O'Brien said, "My husband and I have lived in Cass County nearly all our lives and have farmed in the county for over 42 years. We know our community and see how rural areas across the state have been ignored by politicians in Des Moines for too long. I am running for the Iowa House because I want the voice of rural Iowans to be heard. We need to put people over politics rather than letting our state crumble while catering to special interest. As a wife, mother, grandmother, and farmer, I have the knowledge and work ethic, along with roots in my district, to represent Southwest Iowa well." She said that she will be an advocate for hardworking Iowa families like my own at the Iowa legislature. Her priorities include finding a solution to health care, prioritizing education, creating jobs with benefits, and protecting our farms and environment. O'Brien said, I think we need folks in the legislature who are deeply invested in their communities rather than in the pockets of donors. Let's create a state of Iowa that we are proud of as we move into the future. Also in other news, Friday's 5 p.m. deadline has passed, and we now know which candidates for state house, statewide, and congressional offices submitted the paperwork required to have their names placed on June primary ballots. Radio Iowa's O.K. Henderson reports.
There's a minimum number of petition signatures from Iowans that must be collected for each office a candidate is seeking. Third District congressional candidate Teresa Greenfield fired her campaign manager when he admitted he forged some of the signatures on her petitions, which were filed earlier this week. Greenfield and a crew of supporters made an almost literal 11th-hour dash Friday. They collected signatures from residents in each of the 16 counties in the 3rd Congressional District and submitted them just before the filing deadline. In addition to Greenfield, Republican gubernatorial candidate Ron Corbett and 1st District Congressional candidate Courtney Rowe, a Democrat, submitted their petitions Friday afternoon. Corbett's came in just an hour before the deadline. The Secretary of State's staff will review the petitions from those three candidates on Monday. They'll determine if those candidates met the paperwork requirements. The next deadline in this process is next Friday, the 23rd. Rival campaigns and private citizens have until then to review the petitions from all the candidates and challenge any signatures that appear suspect. Radio Iowa, I'm O.K. Henderson.
And you can go to radioiowa.com to see a list of all the candidates who submitted petitions to run in the Republican, Democratic, and Libertarian Party primaries on June 5th. The list notes which candidates are incumbents. It also notes the district where an incumbent is not seeking re-election. Saturday is St. Patrick's Day, and several law enforcement agencies plan to increase their presence on Iowa roads and highways with a special traffic enforcement project, or STEP. Iowa State Patrol Trooper John Farley says St. Patrick's Day is a common day to see an increase of intoxicated drivers on the highways, and especially when the holiday falls on a weekend.
That just allows everybody that extra time to celebrate. And I want to make sure that everybody realizes the Iowa State Patrol is not against people celebrating. Just making sure that we all do it responsibly.
Farley says people who are stopped for drunk driving often say they had no choice but to drive themselves. He says that's not true.
We live in a time where we have so many options, you know, not only just the designated drivers, but we have ride-sharing services. We have, obviously, cell phones at our disposal all the time, so we can easily call a cab service or any different options that we have.
He says the STEP program provides extra funding to put more troopers on the road.
We will have our normal complement of troopers working this weekend, but then we'll have a few other troopers that will be on their overtime status to come out and help out with this project.
Troopers and other officers will be looking for drunk drivers and other violations throughout the weekend. The legislature's top Republican says state payments to Iowa cities and counties to make up for reduced local property taxes are likely to end soon.
One thing I know is that we can't fund both state government and local government.
That's House Speaker Linda Upmeyer, a Republican from Clear Lake. Upmeyer voted for the 2013 bill that ordered a 10% reduction in commercial property tax assessments in cities and counties.
Some of us remember the debate back when we did that property tax bill. A five-year phase out or a five-year ending was contemplated in that bill and in that bill until the last moments before it was agreed to and passed. So in many people's mind, that always had an end point.
Cities and counties are getting $150 million from the state of Iowa this year to compensate for the reduced commercial property tax rate state officials approved 5 years ago. City officials say this year's $150 million state payment isn't covering up all the lost local tax revenue, and if the state payments end, local government services will be cut. Upmeyer says it's time to begin lowering the amount of money the state is sending to local governments because the state has other spending priorities.
The second fastest growing expenditure in the state is actually dollars sent to local governments.
Upmeyer made her comments during the taping of the Iowa Press program that airs on Iowa Public Television Governor Kim Reynolds and Jack Witt for the new Senate GOP leader have expressed similar sentiments about phasing out these state payments to cities and counties. In December, Governor Reynolds said she wants city and county officials to be involved in the negotiations about how and when the payments end. And pineapples, lemons, and potatoes sound like items on your grocery list. In fact, they are words used to describe U.S. military weapons and ammunition. Steve Livengood, U.S. Army retired, will show and explain ordnance used from World War I to present during the special program called Things That Make You Go Boom this Sunday afternoon at the American Legion Memorial Building, the Armory at 201 Poplar Street in Atlantic. Livengood says that Go Boom in the military come in various in sizes.
We're talking literally howitzers, hand grenades, bazookas and bombs and mines and mortars and just all kinds of things.
Now, you think you know how loud an ordnance is from watching TV or the movies, but Livengood says unless you're a prior military and have experienced the effect yourself, you'd be surprised.
It's not like it is in the movies. There'll be a lot of technical expertise or a technical explanation going on.
Topics during the presentation will include terminology, identification, and technical aspects of ordnance. There will also be almost 50 items on display, but none of the items will contain live explosive material.
There'll be a lot of things on display. I'm thinking there's going to be somewhere around 50, 60 different items down there. Big, heavy things, small, tiny little things you can carry on your shirt pocket.
You'll learn, among other things, what a lazy dog bomb is, and is it really dangerous?
It looks like a bomb, except it's only about an inch and a half long. That's a lazy dog bomblet is what that is, and it's a real piece of ordnance. You throw it out of airplanes because, you know, it's too small to fit on the bomb rack. And the idea, it's a kinetic energy round. It's a solid piece of steel with little fins on it, so it'll fall straight, and from 37,000, 38,000 feet, it really hurts. When you throw them out of an airplane in 5-gallon bucketfuls and they land on trucks, you know, from 37,000 feet and pokes holes right through them, it's like a hailstone, except it's made out of steel instead of ice. Same concept, yeah. It's just pure kinetic energy.
The program presented by Livengood takes place beginning at 2 p.m. Sunday and is one of a series of educational events offered by Arise. Other topics are coming soon on April 15th and May 19th. The Military Museum, with more than 50 new items on display, and Military Library are also open for viewing. That's a look at news and your funeral announcements here this morning. Daryl Culver, age 61 of Atlantic, died March 6th. A memorial service for Daryl Culver will be held today at 10 a.m. at the Roland Funeral Home in Atlantic. Jean E. Hauser, age 87 of Griswold, died Tuesday at the Montgomery County Memorial Hospital in Red Oak. Funeral services for Jean Hauser will be held today at 10:30 a.m. at the Griswold United Methodist Church. Reek and Dune Funeral Home in Griswold has arrangements. Alice Lemaire, age 88 of Walnut, died Tuesday in Elkhorn. A mass of Christian burial for Alice Lemaire will be held today at 10:30 a.m. at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Walnut. Burmeister Johansson Funeral Home in Harlan has arrangements. Jeanette L. Wittrock, age 78, of Anita, died Tuesday at Cass County Memorial Hospital in Atlantic. Services for Jeanette Wittrock will be held today at 10:30 a.m. at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Anita. Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home Atlantic has arrangements. Janice Gruber, age 81, of Fontenelle, died Wednesday at the Good Samaritan Society in Fontenelle. Celebration of Life services for Janice Gruber will be held on Saturday at 11 a.m. at the Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Fontenelle here today. Steen Funeral Home in Fontenelle has arrangements. Donald Dean Gamble, age 60 of Atlantic, died February 27th at Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines. A Celebration of Life luncheon for Donald Dean Gamble will be held today at noon at the Catholic Parish Center in Atlantic. Julie Ann Ranny Mickles, age 61 of Harlan, died Tuesday at home. A visitation for Julie Ann Ranny Mickles will be held on Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. at Polly Jones Funeral Home in Harlan. Rick Lee Flynn, age 56 of Shelby, died Thursday at Methodist Hospital. Services for Rick Lee Flynn are pending at Polly Jones Funeral Home in Harlan. Kenneth Cullen, age 78 of Messina, died Friday at the Village in Indianola. Funeral services for Kenneth Cullen are pending at Steen Funeral Home in Messina. And Gene Milford, age 97 of Atlantic, died Tuesday at the Heritage House in Atlantic. Funeral services for Gene Milford are currently pending at Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home in Atlantic. That's a look at your latest in news and funeral announcements on KJAN. I'm Chris Parks, KJAN News.